After graduating from Ambassador College in Pasadena, I worked for a year in the theology department and then for the church for about another 1.5 to 2 years in data processing. Then I worked for IBM for almost 37 years. And then after that, I was a part-time personal trainer at the YMCA. And I've never had any intentions to be a manager, to be in charge. I was always a worker bee. I've not had the desire to be a manager over others in the workplace or in other ventures as well. Now, some of you in this congregation may be in management and have some skills and experience in that, but many of you, if not most, probably are not an official manager. My wife has spoken often to me about how she has no desire to be over people and supervising them and telling them what to do, except for her husband. But whether you like it or not, we are all called to be leaders. Now, I'm called and you are called in the future, right here on planet Earth, after the return of Jesus Christ as part of God's perfect government for this world. You and I will have significant responsibilities in the world tomorrow. Therefore, it might be a good idea for us as Christians to understand what leadership is all about. Why is leadership important? We're going to reference a number of scriptures and read the other half of approximately the scriptures. For your reference, Matthew 19:28, I should repeat it all the time. For those taking notes, Jesus Christ's disciples are to rule with David over the 12 tribes of Israel. Another reference is the parable of the pounds found in Luke chapter 19. You'd be over 5 cities, you'd be over 10 cities, etc. Let's turn to Revelation chapter 20. Revelation chapter 20, verse 4. Here John says, I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. Then I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the world, who had first, or rather, had not worshipped the beast or his image, and had not received his mark on their forehead or on their hands. And they lived and reigned with Christ 4,000 years. So we need to prepare now for our future role as leaders. And that process of preparation begins with understanding, first of all, what godly leadership is. Now, since we'll have all of us will be prominent leaders in God's government, we need to learn what makes for a good leader and then practice it in this life so we'll be prepared for our future responsibilities. The subject of leadership is certainly a large one. It can take a long time to cover all the aspects of it. Instead, I've chosen to narrow my focus in this sermon to just one aspect in the subject of leadership. The intent of my message today is to examine what I consider to be the most important aspect or characteristic of leadership, and that is the mental picture that you and I have in our minds as to what leadership really is. What is the proper perspective? What is the correct view? What is the right paradigm, if you like to use fancy words? And what is your concept and my concept of leadership? The title of my message today is Flipping the Pyramid. Flipping the Pyramid, the right way to lead. So what is leadership? It's usually good to start out with maybe the dictionary definitions. A number of dictionary entries include occupying the office or position of a leader, or having the capacity to lead others, or the actual act of leading others. But what is leadership really? Is it being in charge? Is it simply about being the boss, controlling everyone, simply giving the orders, being on top of the pyramid? Well, at a very basic level, leadership is influence. And influence can take on many meanings and forms and have a wide range or spectrum of meanings, including motivating and affecting others, all the way to controlling and forcing people to do so. Now, there are many models of leadership, but we're going to look at two, and one of those we're going to be looking at in a very limited time frame. There are two basic models of leadership that we'll cover today. The first model will take only 5 to 10 minutes, and then the remainder of the message will focus on the second model that I really want you to watch and hear very vividly and clearly. Okay, model number one is the pyramid, the traditional model of leadership. This top-down approach has been the predominant management style throughout most of the history of the world. This is how most enterprises and organizations run, whether or not they're in the public or private sector. So we're talking about churches and governmental agencies, businesses, and things of that, whatever. The leader is at the top of the pyramid with sub-leaders under him, and so on down to the workers. And the emphasis here in this model is on the authority of those at the top of the pyramid. And they tend to control information. They seldom, if ever, seek input from those underneath them. And their main concern seems to be just retaining their position at whatever cost is necessary. I'll be quoting Robert Greenleaf a number of times in this message, in the sermon. Robert K. Greenleaf was a retired AT&T executive, and he spent a lot of time studying various management styles and later coined the term servant leadership, which you might have heard now and then. And for 5 or 6 decades now, he's dead, but he's been recognized as the leading expert in articulating the principles of servant leadership in several essays and books that he has authored. He died in 1990 at the age of 86. And here is the first of a number of quotes from his book entitled Servant Leadership, published in 1976. People who are leaders first are too often those who naturally try to control, to make decisions, to give orders. They are driven to lead. They want to be in charge. They are possessive about their leadership position. They think they own it. They don't like feedback because they see it as threatening their position, which is the thing they want to hold on to most of all. End quote. Let's turn to Numbers chapter 16. So we have an incident most of us know well. Korah and others rebel against Moses' position of leadership. Numbers 16, verses 1 to 4. Now Korah, the son of, and then there's a bunch of names there, they rose up before Moses in verse 2 with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, representatives of the congregation, men of renown. They gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You take too much upon yourself, for all of the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord or the Eternal is among them. Why then do you exalt yourself above the assembly of the Lord?" So when Moses heard it, he fell on his face. Of course, eventually we had a new way of people to watch people perish, and that's in a hole, a deep hole in the ground. Now, there's no talking here from Korah about serving or helping the people of Israel. There's no mention here about improving things or wanting to work together for a common goal or common purpose. It's simply a matter of who's in charge. This is the issue for Korah against Moses. Who is the boss? Let's look at another Old Testament example of this top-down leadership and approach. 1 Kings chapter 12, verses 1 to 16. Actually, you might skip some of that, because I did cause you to have services later here. Okay, Rehoboam went to Shechem, where all Israel had gone to Shechem to make him king. So it happened when Jeroboam, the son of Nebo, heard it, for he was still in Egypt, for he fled from the presence of King Solomon and had been dwelling in Egypt, that they sent and called him. And Jeroboam and the whole assembly of Israel came and spoke to Rehoboam, saying, "Your father made our yoke heavy. Now therefore, lighten the burden some service of your father and his heavy weight which he put on us, and we will serve you." So Rehoboam said, "Depart from me for 3 days." Basically what happened is King Rehoboam, first of all, asked the elders, those who had been around the block quite a bit, those who knew what they were talking about, who stood before Solomon while he still lived, and Rehoboam asked them, these elders, "How do you advise me to answer these people? And they always said, be kind, be serving to these people, be reasonable, and they will serve you forever. But then Rehoboam asked his sidekicks, his friends from school or whatever, what their opinion was. How should we respond to that proposal? And the key verse I want to look at, of course, and then what happened was Israel went and said, you know, to your tents, O Israel, what do we have to do with King David? The key verse here is verse 7, so let's look at that. They, the elders, spoke to him, if you today will be a servant. Here he's saying the king should be a servant rather than somebody at the bottom of the pyramid. To these people today and serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever. Of course, we know that Rehoboam took the advice of his friends, who were probably like yes men for him, instead of taking the advice of the elders, who had accumulated a lot of experience and wisdom in the years that they were serving King Solomon. Now again here, let's ask some questions about this attitude that is displayed for those in authority. Where's the concern for those being ruled here under Rehoboam? Where's the striving for a common goal or a common good or a common ground? Where's the humility? Where's the attitude of a servant? Well, certainly not present here with Rehoboam and his approach toward the children of Israel. Now, in contrast to this, how did his father Solomon approach the kingship when he was young, when he was just selected early on? Since we're here in 1 Kings, let's go back a number of chapters to chapter 3, verses 5 and 12. 1 Kings 3, 5 to 12. The Gibeon of the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask, what shall I give you? Talk about hitting the lottery, or the jackpot, or Aladdin's lamp, or something. Ask, what shall I give you? And Solomon said, you have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and have given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. Now, O Lord, my God, you have made your servant king instead of his father David, my king, my father David. But I am a little child. I do not know how to go in or to come out. And your servant is in the midst of your people, whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil, for those who is able to judge this great people of yours. The speech pleased the Eternal that Solomon had asked this thing. God said to him, because you have asked me this thing and have not asked for long life for yourself or riches for yourself or the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like it before you, nor shall any be like you arise afterwards. That's the top-down, the pyramid-type model of leadership. Now for the rest of the message, let's turn to the second model of leadership and compare it and contrast it with this first model. Model number two is called servant leadership. Servant leadership. Flipping the pyramid upside down. Now, the term servant leadership might initially seem contradictive in nature. I mean, don't leaders just lead and servers just serve? Let's look at that from Greenleaf's perspective. So here's another quote from his book. The top-down attitude would be characterized by the person who believes that everyone should serve him or them, as opposed to them serving the others in the institution. In an alternative model of leadership, it is as if everyone in the organization rests on the shoulders of the leader. He is at the bottom of an inverted pyramid, spending time and effort helping others to be effective by motivating them through giving them information, giving them the energy, the resources, the networks, the encouragement, and whatever else they need to do an effective job. End quote. It's one thing to be a human being, like your Lee Greenleaf, and to write some books or to have some novel ideas or have this or that published. But if we turn to account in the Gospels, we'll see that this particular approach or this view, this perspective, this model of leadership has the endorsement of someone who should be very important in our lives, our Lord and Master Jesus Christ. Matthew chapter 20. Matthew 20, verses 20 to 28. This is after the incident where it was, who's going to be the greatest. In Matthew 20, beginning verse 20. Then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to him with her sons, kneeling down and asking something from them. And he said to her, "What do you wish?" She said to him, "Grant that these two sons of mine may sit, one on your right hand, one on your left, in your kingdom." Jesus answered and said, "You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I am about to drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" And they said to him, "We are able." So he said to them, "You will indeed be you shall indeed drink my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I am with. But to sit on my throne with the right hand is not mine to give, but it is for those whom it is prepared by my Father." So, is there a lesson to learn here? Jesus is contradicting the mother of the sons of Zebedee in this rather bold request. And this caused quite a stir for the other disciples, as we'll see now beginning in verse 24. And when the other ten heard it, they were greatly displeased with the two brothers. But Jesus called to them, so all the disciples now are going to hear what Jesus has to say about this thing. Called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." So there's something from Jesus Christ himself showing that this second model of leadership has some merit and value and validity to it. A third quote here from Greenleaf. "Leaders who are servant leaders will first assume leadership only if they see it as the best way that they can serve. They're called to lead rather than driven because they naturally want to be helpful. They aren't possessive about their leadership position. They view it as an act of stewardship rather than ownership. If someone else on the scene is a better leader, they're willing to partner with that individual or even step aside and find another role for themselves where they can serve better. They don't have the need to hold on to a leader's role position if it doesn't make sense from the perspective of service." End quote. Turn to John chapter 13. And we'll read about 5 or 6 verses that we normally mention at the Passover service. John chapter 13, verses 12 to 17. "So when Jesus had washed their feet, taken his garments, and sat down again, he said to them, 'Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you,' showing leadership and service here. 'Truly I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who sits greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them.'" Okay, New Testament Christians were accused in Acts chapter 17, we'll just refer here. Acts 17 verse 6, Christians were accused by the Gentile world of turning the world upside down. They did some things very differently from the rest of the known world. Of course, that's a hallmark of Christianity and the true belief. Is that the world itself are the ones who are turned around and upside down. So it's not surprising that a new and different type of leadership was the complete opposite of what the Gentile practiced, and that would be appropriate for God's chosen people, the nation of Israel. Let's look and see how Peter discusses the role of elders within the church. We find this in 1 Peter, the first epistle. that he wrote. Chapter 5 of 1 Peter, verses 1 to 3. The elders who are among you, I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Shepherds the flock of God which is in among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, nor as being lords over them entrusted to you, but rather being examples to the flock. So leadership in the church is not being lords over, but rather showing by example. And in Hebrews chapter 13, there's two verses there talking about how we're to follow ministry as good models most of the time. Okay, another quote from Greenleaf here. Quote, people with the heart of a servant have certain characteristics and values in common as they make leadership decisions. Their paramount goal is to attain the best interests of those they lead. Personal power, recognition, money, and such is never the focus. Instead, servant leaders get personal satisfaction from watching the growth and development of those that they lead. End quote. After having read Greenleaf's book, I spent some time searching the scriptures for passages that describe in more detail the meaning and the implications of this second model of leadership that we're discussing and considering. In other words, what are the characteristics of servant leadership? And I was able to come up with seven, nothing magic about seven, but I came up with seven such principles or characteristics that show that the model of flipping the pyramid of servant leadership is the correct one. Okay, so number one principle, setting the direction, establishing goals for your people. Setting the direction, establishing goals for your people. So the first thing a good leader should do is to have a purpose, a cause, a reason for being, a cause bigger than himself or herself. And then to set that as the primary goal for those he or her are leading. And we in the Church of God, of course, are very, very blessed to understand God's purpose and reason why we were born into this world, as in reference here, Matthew 6:33, seek first the kingdom of God. Should be the first priority. But since we are physical human beings and we have physical needs, we can often get wrapped up and slowed down by traffic.
Yeah.
But maybe the rat race of trying to earn a living and provide your family, supporting people, worrying about your financial future, etc. However, if we're looking to Jesus Christ as our leader, he reminded us right here in the Sermon on the Mount, that what is most important in life is indeed God's kingdom and seeking that in his righteousness. A church pastor, an elder, deacon, deaconess, father, mother, anyone who is converted should know that the number one priority in life is to seek God and do his commandments. How do we do that? How do we seek God? First of all, we realize that all of his commandments are righteousness. They define good and evil. For your reference there, Psalm 119, 172. Psalm 119, 172, all of God's commandments are righteousness. Ecclesiastes, let's turn there. Solomon's very insightful conclusion to the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Beginning in verse 13 and continuing through 14. Let us hear the conclusion of the matter. This is Ecclesiastes 12:13. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this man is a man's all. It's the purpose, the reason for being, the reason why we've created. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. So fear God, keep his commandments. That's mankind's, as well as an individual's, top priority, or must be the top priority in life. Now, once the goal and direction is set to the group. A good leader will then motivate those within his or her sphere of influence to keep focused upon and to pay attention to that goal. He or she will guide them to consistently maintain a keen focus and to concentrate their life's energy and time in pursuit of that primary goal back in Principle 1, the constant seeking and relentless pursuit of that important goal. 1 Timothy chapter 4, Paul has many instructions to the elders who serve underneath him. And in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 6, you read, "If you instruct the brethren in these things, then you will be a good minister of Jesus Christ, nourished in the words of faith and of the good doctrine which you have carefully followed." This instruct the brethren can also mean to put in remembrance. I think the original King James actually has that. Put in remembrance. In other words, remind them. Don't just say it once and think it's all, you know, going to stick the first time in their minds and hearts. You got to repeat these things. Why do we do the holy days once every year? Why do we do a weekly Sabbath? Well, observe a weekly Sabbath. And Paul's epistles, like I said, to Timothy are filled with admonitions for Timothy to preach and teach the way of God to his chosen people. Peter's epistles that also make it clear that there's a serious duty to remind the brethren of godly principles. So let's turn to 2 Peter. Peter's epistle then makes it clear that we're to have a serious approach to God's ways. So 2 Peter, verse 1, or rather chapter 1, verse 12. 1:12. "For this reason, I will not be negligent to remind you." Once again, it's not a one and done over done with. You've got to remind the people. "You always of these things, though you know and are established in the present truth." So he's saying, you got it. Don't let it go. Remind yourself of doing God's will. Okay, so that's number two principle, keeping your people focused upon the goal. Number three, setting the right example. "Do as I say and not as I do" has never been very effective. Do as I say and not as I do. Most people, especially youth, tend to be very keen and talented in identifying hypocrisy. And that probably more than almost anything else will diminish a leader's ability to motivate or influence his or her people more than over other things. Now, those in leadership positions, whether it be an ordained individual, a parent, teacher, older siblings even, or whoever, must be diligent and confident and conscientious about the kind of example that they are setting for all of the people around them, because those people are looking up. Leaders, real leaders, must hold the values that are consistent with the goal that was set in characteristic one, and they must live by these values. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 11 to see a very plain statement from Paul about example. 1 Corinthians 11, verses 1 and 2. "Imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the traditions just as I delivered them to you." Now Paul is not here saying just blindly follow me, right? Just follow him. Rather, he urged them to follow his examples, inasmuch as it was the following the example of Jesus Christ that he set in his earthly life. And of course, Christ was the perfect example in all aspects of life. The beginning point, I believe, of setting a good example for others is to have a close and personal relationship with God yourself. That's kind of a starting point. More than anything else, it's more important than charisma or intelligence or good looks or talent or having read many books on leadership or published books. Being right with God is going to enable you to set a good example to those you are leading. A true leader has strong convictions, and he has the courage, when necessary, to stand up for those convictions, regardless of the consequences. Effective leaders are those who live by the very principles that they espouse. In other words, they walk the walk as well as talk the talk. Jesus Christ had this to say to the disciples in John chapter 15. John chapter 15 and verse 15, so it's really easy to remember. John 15, 15, Jesus Christ says to his disciples here, "No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, especially in the pyramid, top-down style of management. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard from the Father I have made known to you." Jesus Christ let the disciples know what a good example is by showing them how to act, how to be. The number four principle or top characteristic of leadership, servant leadership, is effective communication. Effective communication. In the traditional pyramid paradigm of leadership, remember, that most knowledge is carefully guarded by those at the top and is rarely shared with those below. They tend to keep things to themselves. But knowledge can be very useful. It can be powerful in the right hand. So the servant leaders are willing to share that knowledge that they have with others. They're not afraid of anything. In John 15, 15, Jesus Christ shared the knowledge of God with the disciples. Honesty is always the best policy, and having regular, consistent, open, and honest communication with those whom you are leading is a means to empower those individuals and to build a high level of trust between you and those whom you are serving, mentoring, and helping to grow. Number five characteristic, making time for your people. Ultimately, it really comes down to this. Your time is your life. So time rather than, or rather, yeah, time is very important. Your time is important. Therefore, don't skimp on it for even a vast amount of money. So your time is your life. Let's turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians 5, verse 16. See then that you walk circumspectly. In other words, you're very careful about how you behave in life. Not as fools, but as wise. Redeeming the time, making the most of the time, because the days are evil. So it is helpful and yes, even necessary that you share the same core principles and have those in your value. But we need to actively seek that kind of input. Spend time with those whom you are trying to lead. Help them, mentor them, support them. Show them that you really care by spending that most valuable commodity that you have, and that is the time of your life. Number six principle or characteristic. Actively seek input. Actively seek input. A good leader does not believe that he or she has all the answers, or that he or she is doing everything just right, just so. But they deeply desire to seek the answers and to do things properly. Therefore, those people are open to suggestions. Let's look at a good example of this in Exodus chapter 18. Exodus 18, beginning in verse 13. And so it was on the next day that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood before Moses from morning till evening. So when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did for the people, he said, "What is this thing that you are doing to the people? Why do you alone sit and all the people stand before you from morning until evening?" Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a difficulty, they come to me, and I judge between one and the other, and I make known the statutes of God and his laws." So Moses' father-in-law said to him, "The thing that you do is not good. Both you and these people who are with you will surely wear yourselves out. For this thing is too much for you. You are not able to perform it by yourself. Listen now to my voice. I will give you counsel, and God will be with you. Stand before God for the people, so that you may bring the difficulties to God. And you shall teach them the statutes and the laws, and show them the way in which they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, you shall select from all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place us over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And then let them judge the people at all times. Then it shall be that every great matter they shall bring to you, but every small matter that they themselves shall judge. So it will be easier for you, for they will bear the burden with you. If you do this thing and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure, and all his people will go also to their place of peace. So Moses heeded the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. So they judged the people at all times. The hard cases they brought to Moses, but they judged every small case themselves. Now Moses here didn't reprimand Jethro for his unsolicited input, did he? Moses did not pull rank saying, "Don't you know who I am?" nor did he ignore the advice. He actually took the advice. So he implemented the sound counsel and became a more effective leader for it, and didn't wear himself out or the people. But in addition to being willing to listen to others, which is a reactive posture, the servant leader is also proactive and actually seeks input from those whom he is serving on a regular basis. Proverbs 24, verse 6 is a reference. Proverbs 24, 6. Very familiar passage for you. In the multitude of counsel, there is safety. So he actually seeks input. If you are in any kind of leadership position, it is foolhardy to surround yourself with just your close friends or with those who share the same opinions as you share, or on every matter, everything. You need people who are not more, or much more, than simply yes men. It is helpful and yes, even necessary to have some commonality, to share some core principles, some basic moral values that you have in common. But you oftentimes need to consider other perspectives, other viewpoints, in order to have sound judgment, to make sure there's a multitude of counsel, sound judgment to make wise decisions. And finally, number 7, and we're going to get way under 2 hours for services, so even despite the late start, I think we're going to be okay. Developing your people. This is a final trait, important trait of an effective servant leader, is that he or she does not try to do it all by themselves. The servant leader knows when and how to delegate and how to mentor. The servant leader is interested in the growth and development of his or her people, giving them the opportunity to learn, honing their skills, broadening their experience and their base. You need to be preparing them to be effective leaders in the world tomorrow, in the future. And by helping them to learn and grow by the tasks and responsibilities and opportunities that you as a servant leader give to your people. Bring them to the point where they can function fairly independently without a lot of guidance and supervision and oversight. Mentor them so they can eventually fill your shoes. Matthew chapter 28. Great Commission. After having been mentored by them intensively for 3.5 years, Jesus Christ commanded the disciples to carry on the work of God. Matthew 28. 19 to 20. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. So effective leadership is about mentoring. Again, preparing the next generation that's coming in along. How can I apply this to my life? Well, it's one thing to say that we're destined to become, leaders in the world tomorrow. It's quite another thing to contemplate the importance that leadership can have in our lives here and now, as well as putting those principles in place for the future. So how can I apply this to my life, in my marriage, in my family, in the marketplace, in my job, amongst society, in my neighborhood? I leave that an open-ended assignment for all of us, maybe to contemplate in the days. Or maybe somewhere along the line, someone else will take the leadership topic and expound further on that. If we agree that the upside down pyramid is based on Jesus Christ's clear teaching, then the approaches that we will want to make and take leaders here and now and in preparation for even greater responsibilities in the future world. Incorporate the principles of servant leadership, these seven principles, into everything you do. That's all I wanted to do today, was to introduce you to the concept of servant leadership and plainly show that it is the correct perspective that we should have. That's what leadership is all about. Contrary to what you may have believed or been taught in the past, or what you've experienced in your own family or upbringing, or even if you might have heard that from the pulpit in years past. Jesus Christ came to this earth for a number of very important reasons. One of those reasons was to teach us and show us by the right example, the right way to live, which includes the right way to lead. The pyramid shape is correct, but it's also vital to have the orientation of that shape correct as well. Jesus himself taught the disciples a drastically different way to look at leadership, like flipping the pyramid and exhorting all of his true followers to become servant leaders. Brethren, let us all carry on the work of God by being servant leaders.